Hi, and welcome to Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. I'm a proud St. Paul Badu and Caribbean man from the Torres Strait. And I'm also the son of the designer of the Torres Strait Islander flag, Bernard Namok Sr., and an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Join me now on Yarning Disability as we showcase First Nations people living with a disability, as well as their families and carers and other industry professionals.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned that the following podcast may contain the voices and names of people who are deceased. The First Peoples Disability Network and the producers of this podcast recognise the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders past, present, and the future leaders of tomorrow. FPDN would like to acknowledge our founding elders and their lasting legacy, Uncle Lester Bostock and Auntie Gal Rankin, and acknowledge all First Peoples living with a disability.
Clarus McCarthy Grogan, or better known as CJ, is a proud Yanyuwa, Garawa, and Gugguyalanji man from Borroloola and Cairns in far north Queensland. Clarus is also a proud wheelchair basketballer and was born with fibular limb deficiency, meaning since childbirth, his leg wasn't formed properly, and it's a lot shorter than his left leg. But this hasn't stopped him from playing wheelchair basketball and made the decision to go to college in the United States.
My name is Clarence McCarthy Grogan. I'm also known as CJ. I'm a wheelchair basketballer and I'm originally from Darwin, but I'm a Yanyuwa and Gadawa man on my mother's side from Borroloola in the Gulf of Carpentaria, and Gugguyalanji man on my father's side in Cairns, in far north Queensland.
Can you just tell me about your story?
Yeah, so I was born with my disability. So my disability is called fibular limb deficiency. Now, basically, that just means that my right leg wasn't formed properly, and it's a lot shorter than my left leg, but my disability was also partially in my left leg as well, which means that I can't really walk long distances. You know, when I'm around home, I'll either use my chair a bit or I'll just walk around, you know, just small areas. But once I pretty much leave the gate, going out and about to shopping centres or going to training at Darwin Basketball, the courts there, or if I'm going to the gym, then I'll have my day chair. That's my everyday one. So just helps me be a bit more independent, and, you know, getting from A to B. But yeah, so I was born with my disability and, you know, I grew up here in Darwin playing a lot of different sports, as you know, we would say able-bodied sports. And yeah, I played able-bodied basketball at school all the time with a lot of my mates, played AFL, played rugby league, rugby union, soccer, baseball, you know, t-ball, softball, all sorts of team sports. But it got to that stage where as I got older, my upper body started to develop and my legs couldn't cope. So it just meant that, you know, I was basically restricted to playing, I guess, one sport then. And it wasn't, you know, that wasn't a bad thing. It was just the reality of how life would be for me as I got older, you know. I found out about wheelchair basketball because of my able-bodied coach when I played basketball in Alice Springs. So I started playing able-bodied basketball back in 2004 when we were living in Alice. And I had no idea about wheelchair basketball at that point. But once I was playing, you know, I only played just because I love playing with my mates. So we joined up to a club there. My brother played for a team too. And my coach told my parents about wheelchair basketball, and by the time we came back home to Darwin, we moved back, we did a bit of homework and looked into it and found out that there was a social competition here to play wheelchair basketball. I think back then they played, they had about six or seven teams, and that was in 2005 when we found out when the season started. So came down and jumped in a chair for the first time, like, you know, in a basketball chair. And, you know, I think I remember I scored like two baskets in my first game. And, you know, for me, it was just like an unreal feeling. Just, you know, something new, you know, it was a new sport to me. You know, I was only 11 years old at that point, and being able to feel like I was on the same level as everyone else, you know, in a wheelchair, it brought a lot of joy just because I was able to keep up with everybody else now. And then after a while, it kind of turned around to become the opposite. I was a bit ahead of everybody else, you know, so, but regardless of, you know, me learning to become quicker and pushing my chair and stuff, it was just being able to feel like I was on the same level playing field at the end of the day. And that's kind of what I missed out on a lot as I started to get older, you know, kids my age, you know, we were starting to go to high school, they were getting stronger, getting taller, and I just couldn't keep up with that playing any able-bodied sports no longer. So, but yeah, you know, once I started playing wheelchair basketball, like as weeks went on, like I started to find a new love for the game. And yeah, it was just, yeah, just unreal feeling to be able to play wheelchair basketball. And at one point, you know, to keep me motivated and encouraging me was my parents joining me in a team. So we had a little family team as well. And they love playing wheelchair basketball at that same time as well. You know, it was just something different for them. And, you know, they never really grew up playing much basketball themselves. So, you know, both my parents, you know, dad had a footy background, and mum was, you know, swimming and tennis. And so it was, yeah, it was a bit different. And she played softball as well. But yeah, basketball was a whole new sport, I think, for everybody. But they could just see how much I really enjoyed the sport, and they just wanted to just give me as many opportunities as they could, or give me as much support as they could. And that's why, yeah, they joined the team, and we'd play every Thursday or Friday night, whichever night it was on. And I think I think mum played for a little bit just because she'd generally be pretty busy with work and stuff. But then dad, I think after a few seasons, he played for quite a while actually, but after a few seasons, he had to give it a break because it was just too much on his shoulders and his hands then. So old fella, he was, but it just got to that point for me too, that, you know, I started to become a bit stronger and was starting to slowly develop my game at the social level that was. And I started to realize like, hey, I think I need to get out of Darwin to test myself, you know. I want to play at the highest level to see how good I can become. And the only way to do that, unfortunately, was to leave Darwin and get out of my comfort zone. That's pretty much what I always like to reiterate to people is, you know, doesn't matter what you want to do in life. It's the unfortunate reality is that you've got to get out of your comfort zone. You know, it's nothing. If everything was if it was all easy, then, you know, everyone would be doing it, right? But you know, you really got to work towards what you want to achieve in life, chase your dreams and your goals. And you know, my goal back then, and it still is today, is representing my country playing wheelchair basketball. And I that was my dream. You know, I want to play at the highest level in the country, in Australia, and I want to go on and represent our country and represent our mob. And that was always something that was important to me. And yeah, that's why I made the move to go to boarding school in 2008. So I went to boarding school for 4 years and I graduated there. And then I think the hard part about that was I had to make the decision then after that, like where I was going to be based after living in Sydney for 4 years, because I'd started playing in the National Wheelchair Basketball League when I was in year 10. So I was about 15 when I first started. And I played for the New South Wales Junior State team for I don't know, between 4 to 6 years. So quite some time there. And it just, yeah, I was kind of back to square one again, I guess you could say, that in the sense of, well, now that I've graduated, I've got to make a decision. Am I going to go to university and study to stay in Sydney so that I could keep playing basketball at a high level, or will I work and try and find a job? And I think straight after school, I just knew I wasn't ready for school to keep going straight away. I needed a bit of a break. So I stayed in Sydney. I made the decision to stay in Sydney. And then the next step was, okay, well, where can I work? I found a job and I started to find my way. And I got a job, a traineeship working at Westpac. So I had a traineeship with Westpac as a bank teller. And I worked at a branch in the CBD in Sydney. I worked there for about three and a half years. And I did a transfer back to Darwin for a few months, but then I realized, I needed to stay in Sydney. And after that, I was looking at moving into another role, I guess, from the banking industry. But I ended up moving over to NAB for about 6 to 9 months, I believe. And it got to a point for me that I finally realized, like, hey, you know what? I actually want to study now. I want to go to college. I want to study. And, I enjoyed the whole experience of being able to work in the financial services industry. Made some really good friendships, lifelong friendships there, with on a professional level and a personal level. And, because this is me, just an 18-year-old straight out of high school, working in the real world and being able to work, at one of the four large banks for your first real job, that's quite overwhelming. But it was a really, really cool experience to be able to have those opportunities and just learn what it's like to work with people on a professional level and have those professional relationships. And then, yeah, once I made the decision to go to college in the US, I wanted to study overseas and play basketball. That was always another goal of mine. It wasn't about where, it was more about when. When will I be ready? And I didn't go to college in the US until I was about 23. Spent some time before that just busy working, and finally had a ticker that said, yep, you got to go now. You got to go overseas and play. Get out of here. Get out of Australia. I got a scholarship to the University of Texas at Arlington. I originally went there to study journalism because that was why I wanted to get out of banking. But once I got over there, I started to just explore, I guess, what other degrees there were and what other options I had. But once I ended up, I started to study a lot of public health courses because I found public health quite interesting, just in regards to what I do as an athlete off the court, going out, doing a lot of community engagement work and just trying to learn more about areas that I go to and just wanting to help people. And I found that link between what I do as an athlete and doing that in trying to promote more awareness and educate people a bit more on, people with disability, and showing them, what's possible. It's all about having that positive attitude and the right mindset, and showing that anything is possible, And mm-hmm. After a while, by the time I graduated, I ended up getting my Bachelor of Science in University Studies. Now it's kind of like interdisciplinary sort of coursework. But I also finished with my minor in Disability Studies. So I found that quite interesting, getting the Disability Studies minor, because that's something I never really heard much about in Australia. Overseas in the US, they have the Americans with Disabilities Act that was created in the 90s. And basically that was brought in to try and show people how to treat people with disabilities. It was really interesting learning about the history of the US in how they treated people and treat people today with disability. And but playing wheelchair basketball over there was a awesome experience. You know, I was there. I studied for 6 years, and I studied for 6 years even though I played for five, because I came back home for about 18 months back to Darwin just because of COVID. Yeah, so you know, when COVID first broke out, unfortunately, just everything was sort of all up in the air, you know. And at that point, it was more about just a safety concern for me, and my parents really wanted me back. Even if I chose to stay, I think, in Texas or in the US, I don't think they would have allowed that. So they, you know, I had to come back home, and it was the right call too, coming back home, because there was just so much uncertainty. At least I was able to live back home with my dad, and you know, see my mom a lot, and then, you know, just in case things got worse, we all had no idea how things were gonna end up, but it was just a matter of just being back with family, or closer to family, at least being in Australia, that was. And yeah, started doing a lot of community work here at the Darwin Basketball Association, and was able to help bring the wheelchair basketball competition back. So they've been going for, you know, three years now, back again. And I think they were out for some time, but COVID in some sense really turned into a positive scenario for us in terms of the wheelchair basketball aspect. We're able to get more people involved with wheelchair basketball. You know, I was able to get back out in the community with one of my good mates as well, Tom O'Neill Thorne, another Darwin follower. And we did a lot of coaching clinics, a lot of school visits and school sessions to just promote the sport and just showcase, you know, hey, like, we started here and this is where we are. You know, at that point, Tom was, I think he already did a year or two in Spain, and then I was coming off, or still, you know, at that time I was still living in the US, going back when I could, but just showing, like, hey, like, anything is possible, you know, like, look at where we are now, but right here on this very court that we're teaching you about wheelchair basketball, this is where we both started playing the sport that we love. So we're just trying to show people, like, hey, like, you know, I think a lot of people say that, you know, anything is possible. And I think when people hear that, they think, oh, they're just saying that, you know, when people hear them say that. But when we're actually out there showing people, it's like, no, like, this is literally what we've done and where we started, and we just want to show you, like, you just got to have a positive mindset. You know, yeah, it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have setbacks at some point in your life and your career, or, you know, but it's how you overcome those setbacks. It'll show your true character. And, you know, if it weren't for COVID to bring us back, then I think there wouldn't be a Darwin wheelchair basketball team at the moment. So, you know, Tom and I both were co-captains for the Darwin Salties, and we were able to speak with Darwin Basketball about it, because when we were back, they started to see how much engagement wheelchair basketball brought to the community, and they were just very supportive of Tom and I, as well as, you know, Basketball NT and the NT Sports Academy as well. And, you know, we train there each week in the gym, and just the whole community of Darwin just, you know, got around us and were very supportive, and they just wanted to see us excel as well, and, you know, reach our goals still. You know, we've been playing for quite some time now, and we still got plenty of things we'd like to do and achieve. But and then I guess I went back after 18 months of being back home in Darwin, and then went back to college, and graduated in May 2022. And in March 2022, that's when we hosted the National Championship weekend. So each year a college is allocated on hosting the National Championships for the wheelchair basketball tournament. And we were the chosen college for that in my senior year. And it was a real fairy tale finish. You know, we finished as the champions, the national intercollegiate champions of wheelchair basketball. And, you know, finishing your last game on your home court as a senior, It was just a surreal feeling. You know, you watch movies and you hear stories about other people, and you can only dream of that sort of stuff. And I think it was, it was very surreal feeling, because the day before that we were in the semi-final against the University of Wisconsin Whitewater, and by halftime we were down about 19 or 20 points. And because we were the number one seed going into the national championship weekend, and they were the fourth seed. And you know, as they say over in the US, you know, it's March Madness, anything can happen. And they were up 19, 20 points by half time, and we only had 20 minutes left to try and change that or turn it around and do something. And the second half came around, and thankfully, in the end, I think we won by about 4 or so points. We didn't get back into the, we didn't get in front in the lead until probably the last maybe 2 or 3 minutes. But you know, like I always tell people, you know, basketball is a 40-minute game, and that's my mindset, and I think that just translated on court because of how my mindset is off court. You know, you're always gonna have your setbacks, but are you gonna let it overcome you, or are you gonna, you know, let it dictate where you want to go, or are you gonna make that decision for yourself? And that's where, we ended up winning that game, which was really cool. And I'll send you the link for that game, actually. I think you might enjoy it yourself. And so we beat the UW team by about 4 points in the semifinal, and then we went on to play the University of Alabama in the championship. And I don't know what it was with us, but we were always a team that started off slow, you know, like, and even in the first game against the eighth seed team, we were down, I think, 5 or 6 points. They started off really strong against us, and but thankfully we came came out on top. But for the national championship game against Alabama, they were ahead of us, I think, by about 10 points early in the first half. And it's funny, in that moment, like when I look back at it, in that moment I remember looking up at the scoreboard and we were down 10 in the first, you know, 10 minutes or so. But to me, I wasn't worried, you know. I think I just knew that this game is it's going to be it's you know it's going to be quite easy. And I say that because we just worked so hard in the game yesterday to come back down from 19, 20 points to be here. So we weren't going to lose this, you know. And that was my mindset, was, and it wasn't that I was overconfident or anything like that. It was just more of the fact that, nah, like, we worked too hard to get here to be the number one team. And my, like, you know, I speak for myself here, but I worked too hard to get to where I am right now to be in this moment. I didn't come back all the way to the US and finish off as, you know, as a runner up. Like, I come here to finish up as a national champion. And we ended up winning against the University of Alabama. I think we beat them by about, I don't know, 11 or something points in the end, which was, which was, fairy tale finish, like I mentioned. And I think what really made it was very special to me. But it wasn't, you know, I don't play basketball for those individual awards. You know, I think as a kid, you look at that growing up, you're like, oh, that'd be really cool winning this award or that award. But the older I got, I started to understand, like, no, it really is a team sport. And you know, if you do your job, then the results will take care of itself for the team, and you do your job well enough, then you'll be fortunate enough to be able to win those individual awards. But that weekend was such a fun weekend. Very, it was a lot of work, very hard weekend. But we won the national championship, and then I was chosen as the finals MVP. So that was just a surreal feeling as well, because you know, over the 5 years of playing, not once was I selected as a as an All-American recipient. So they normally choose between like a first team All-American, second and like a third team All-American, and five players per team per year. And over those 5 years, you know, I'd never received it. I've received a few nominations, but I was never selected to be in any of those teams. So to win a finals MVP, yeah, it was just, yeah, it was really, it meant a lot, just because I knew, you know, over those years, I should have at least got into one of those teams. But that was never my goal to try and get in a All-American. It was, the end goal was, I want to win a national championship, because at the end of the day, I can celebrate with, you know, my whole team, the whole program, and we can all celebrate together, rather than, yeah, bad luck maybe next year and, you know, oh, but congrats on individual awards. Like, no, I want a championship ring, because they do national championship rings over there. And yeah, end of the day, after playing over there for 5 years, and I was able to leave with three championship rings and a finals MVP. But to me, those were all just a bonus. You know, my goal there originally going over was to get the degree. That was always number one priority. But yeah, it's awesome when you can win a few national championships in between. Because like I said earlier, the reality is, you know, not a lot of players get to play in a national championship, let alone win one. And I was able to win three of the 5 years I was able to play. So, yeah, just, you know, very grateful for all the opportunities I've been given. But in saying that, I also got to remind myself at times to give myself a pat on the back, just because none of that would have happened if I didn't work up the courage to get out of my comfort zone. And that's why I always, like, I sound like a broken record, but it's true. You know, like, if you're not going to get out of your comfort zone and try and achieve what you really want to work towards, then, you know, you're not going to get those results, unfortunately.
And like all the achievements, like, congratulations with all the achievements. Like, when you look back to when you were growing up, like, did you, or I guess your family, kind of knew about fibular limb deficiency, and did you know about that growing up and stuff like that?
Did we know, just did we think that stuff like that would happen? Is that what you? Yeah. No, look, no idea. I think just growing up having that disability, you know, it was very new to both my parents. You know, we didn't know what to expect, and but I think that's why it was even more important that my parents try to encourage me a lot with playing basketball. And it wasn't even just about playing basketball, it was just in general, you know. They wanted to make sure that I had the same amount of opportunities and the same amount of support that they gave to my brothers and my cousins. And, you know, like, it wasn't just having my disability didn't mean anything different. It was just, they just wanted to show that as long as, you know, they're supporting me, and which they did, and you know, I would be able to achieve the same amount as everyone else is, you know, with the right support and the right guidance and encouragement. And yeah, you know, here I am today.
Thankful for them. Also, nothing's impossible, eh?
Yeah, no, that's what I try to tell people, you know, like, and like I said, I hate saying it, because I kind of sound like a broken record, but it really is true, you know, like. It can be scary, and that's the biggest part about, I think, getting out of your comfort zone, because you don't know what's out there, and that can be a bit daunting to a lot of people. And, you know, I had my tough times, I guess, growing up. You know, I went to boarding school, and getting over that homesickness was probably the biggest factor. It almost brought me back home, you know. It did bring me back home for, you know, a couple months, but then I worked up the courage to go back and say, nah, I'm going to go back.
How did you kind of cope with being homesickness? Because you are away from families, and there is no family down the road to go and chill out, you know? Like, how do you kind of deal with if you're feeling homesick?
Yeah, look, Yeah, when I get when I did get homesick when I was a kid, you know, my parents would always just keep giving me those reminders, you know, like, hey, you're there for basketball. Remember what the end goal is, you know, you want to get to this place, you want to do this, you want to do that. Like you're not going to get those opportunities being here in Darwin, you know. They always reminded me, and I think that's where it came from, was them always having to just remind me, just remember, hey, like, you come back here, like things are going to be very different for you, and you're probably not going to achieve those goals that you have right now. You might have to make some new goals based on the reality of living back in Darwin at that time. And I think that's pretty much, yeah, that's what got me through the homesickness, was just my parents reminding me, like, hey, this is what it is, and you know, we can't support you enough up here, like you've got to be down there basically. And I think, yeah, over time as I got, you know, older, I started to realize that as well. And but that also taught me on what it was like in terms of being able to live on my own and look after myself, and be prepared for, you know, those times when I do want to live overseas, or if I get those opportunities to travel overseas and play basketball and live away from home. That was a starting point going to boarding school, you know. So now I don't ever get homesick. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I miss people, but I know I'll be back home, you know, this dates and or these days, you know, you can catch up on FaceTime or, you know, on those video calls. And but I think I don't get homesick these days just generally because I'm always so busy. You know, I'm busy training, busy playing games, busy traveling. Just a lot's yeah, a lot goes on when we're living overseas. And then I think once I've got a bit of downtime and just time to myself to relax, I don't really think of home. I just think of, I just need to gain energy again to get back to my for my week, you know, like what's on for tomorrow. And 'cause you know, like that's my job. I'm a professional athlete, you know, I play in a professional league overseas. And yeah, you gotta be switched on. And it's, you know, it's an awesome experience. You know, I'm living out my dream. And that's probably the, if there's anything that people could take away from our chat today, is that yeah, I'm able to live out my dream because I was able to get out of my comfort zone. You know, it's not easy getting out of your comfort zone, but if you want to, you know, achieve your goals and chase your dreams, and that's the starting point. And it's easier said than done, but you know, the goal for me was always bigger than the uncertainty of getting out of the comfort zone. And but I think also if we can slowly start to discuss, you know, why do people think it's always going to be a negative thing getting out of your comfort zone? Why are people afraid? Why can't we look at that as a positive? Like, yeah, you don't know what else is out there. Like, it could be a really good thing. But I think that's just an automatic assumption that, oh no, it's going to be a bad thing. Like, why is it going to be a bad thing though? You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's just a human nature thing, I think, you know. People always frightened of what they don't really know. And if we changed our mindset and thinking of all the possibilities, then I think, yeah, life would be a whole lot different for a lot of us, you know. So, and that's probably the best thing that I could, yeah, say right now to try and help people if people are finding it tough to get out of their comfort zones. And it's not about sport. It's about, you know, they want to become a singer, they want to be an actor, or they want to get out of their current situations, and they want to go to university even, you know, like, yeah, you've got to get out of your comfort zone. So, you know, you're not going to get anywhere if you don't. And that's probably the best thing that I could say to try and, yeah, help people with their dreams.
And like since coming back from the States, do you still like do you see a lot of barriers families with disability are facing there in Darwin or throughout your travels here in Australia?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of families and a lot of individuals with disability as well, and that's why since being back because of COVID, it showed me what potential opportunities can come out of this. And I'm in a very fortunate position now that I've gone through so much to get to where I am today that like I really enjoy going out and to the communities and just being an advocate for the sport and for people with disability because I know how hard it was. I don't forget how hard it was for me to get to where I am today, and I want to try and help that transition for people who have no idea or they're just learning about the sport or they want to know a bit more. I want to show them like, hey, make things a bit easier for them. So that's why we wanted to create a Darwin wheelchair National League team, the Darwin Salties wheelchair team, and we want to show people like, hey, if there's other mob out there and just people with disability in general, that would that can play wheelchair basketball and they want to try and play, then they don't have to go outside of the territory or outside of Darwin at least, because that was a tough part was leaving altogether because there was just nothing there, nothing here in Darwin, sorry. And now we've at least got some sort of pathway. Like there's a National League team now, and there's pathways to playing wheelchair basketball in Darwin and the Northern Territory. Whereas when I first started, that did not happen. And that was actually another goal of mine when I was a kid was I'd love to help create a National League team in Darwin so that people like me didn't have to leave Darwin and go through all the stuff that I went through. I want to make it easier for them so that, you know what? They're like the major cities now around the country, but they've got a wheelchair basketball team in their backyard now. They don't have to leave interstate only when they play games now or for national team camps and stuff like that. So, so that's probably the best part about it is I'm able to do that now and using my profile to try and raise more awareness about that too. And just wanting to help people. In general, yeah.
And I think the last question you kind of answered earlier, but I was going to ask you about some like a positive message you want to send to mob with disability, but you already answered that further up, but I don't know, like where do you see yourself like in 5 years' time?
In 5 years' time, I know that's a good question because I don't even know what I'm doing for lunch today. Nah, look, 5 years' time, I guess, well, is I still want to be playing wheelchair basketball. I just turned 30 last month, and people have been playing wheelchair basketball up until the late 30s, early 40s at a very high level. So I'd like to think that I'm still playing wheelchair basketball at a very high level. But I mean, at the same time, in saying that, I also off the court, I would love to be able to do more out in the communities and just keep doing what I'm doing at the moment, but hopefully can do it a bit more frequently and just have the consistency to go out and about in the communities and in the Northern Territory and then work my way around Australia as well. But starting off with the NT and go from there with trying to promote more awareness about those with disability and wheelchair basketball. Because I love the sport so much and I just want to show people how fun it can be and because it's a team sport, I'm very family orientated. So that's why playing a team sport was always important to me because any teams that I've played for, I always look at my teammates as family, whether it's for one season or for four or five or whatever it is, because end of the day, we're all working hard together to try and achieve the same goal. And at the end of the day, if one fails, we all fail. And that's just like family, right? You support each other, through the highs and the lows, and And basketball's just given me so many opportunities that, you know, I never would have achieved if I didn't get out of my comfort zone. And I just want to show people, hey, it really is possible. But yeah, you just gotta be brave enough, I guess, to want to go out into the unknown and get out of the comfort zone.
That was Clarence McCarthy Grogan, or better known as CJ, a proud Yanyuwa, Garawa, and Gugulelanji man from Borroloola in Cairns. If there's anything you heard in today's episode that raises concerns for you, there is help available. You can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636 36 or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thanks for listening to Yarning Disability. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. Follow FPDN on our social media accounts to stay up to date with future episodes and information. You can also visit our website at www.fpdn.org.au. Are you an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person living with a disability? Or maybe you're a parent or a carer of an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person with a disability? If so, FPDN would love to hear your story. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast, now is your time. To share your story with us, you can email us at podcast@fpdn.org.au or phone 0292 674 195.